All right, good afternoon, and I am here to welcome you back to the Embrace Radio Hour. I am joined here with Esther and Maria from the Office of Intercultural Affairs.
Hello, Sophie.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I just finished a midterm, so I feel free.
Free.
Yes.
And fall break starts tomorrow, so
yes.
Good timing.
Really nice.
Are you going anywhere for fall break?
I'm going to go to Nashville for 2 days to see my roommates run the Spartan Race.
What's the Spartan Race?
It's like a 5K mixed with like 27 obstacles. So like climbing walls, crawling, carrying heavy things. And only one of my roommates only started training 2 days ago. So,
well,
it's going to be a show.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope she does okay.
I hope so too. We'll find out.
We wish her the best.
Yes. And if nothing else, I hope she has fun doing it.
Yes.
It sounds like a fun thing.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. And we're camping, which I haven't done in like years. So.
Camping. And it's camping weather. It's a little blustery out there.
Chilly, yeah. So
dress warm.
We'll see how that goes.
Good luck, Sophie.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to be back.
It is good to be back with you, Maria. And I'm so excited about our guest today. And I'm even more excited because I get to tell the Asbury world and the entire world that's listening that today we get to celebrate Maria. It's Maria's birthday.
It's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So it has been fun, and it's always a joy because I think Maria and I are just a few days apart in mm-hmm. our birthdays. And so I celebrated mine on Friday and get to celebrate Maria today. So
yes,
it's fun, Maria. What are you most looking forward to?
Oh, of all the questions I thought you were going to ask, I did not think of that one. What am I most looking forward to? Well, I don't know. But what I was going to say is I'm 40 this year, so it's kind of a big deal.
It is special.
And it's very weird to be 40. There's part of me that's like, I made it to 40. That's great.
We Look, are glad so you made it to 40.
And you know, I got, this is a slight rabbit trail, but I have a neighbor from when we were first married who is, I think, in her 90s now, and she still writes me letters. So we lived next door to her for several years. And so she remembers all of our birthdays, and she wrote me a letter and she said, life begins at 40. So welcome to this part, you know, your life. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of interesting to think about 40 as maybe this, I don't know, could be a halfway mark. I don't know. But it's exciting to think about the days that have been and what might come. But I don't know if when specific thing that I'm most excited about. I have to think about that one.
Okay.
I'll get back to you next time.
I was going to say, or maybe by the end of the show, you
right,
may
maybe
have
I'll
an
think
answer
about
for
it.
Us.
Yes.
But it is an absolute delight to celebrate you and to thank God for your life.
Well, thank you. The feeling is mutual. And birthdays are just so fun because all you had to do was be born. You didn't have to
true.
Do anything. Just be born. And then the day comes and everyone says, you're so great. So
I know I'm going to have to say a thank you, a shout out to Dr. Doug Walker.
Yes.
And the Air 90 staff
mm-hmm.
For this beautiful birthday surprise. There was a card sitting here with candy.
Yes.
With chocolate
so kind.
It. So kind. So thank you, Dr. Walker.
Thank you.
I hope you're
Air
listening.
One staff. Air 1? No. Air 90.
Air 90.
I'm sorry. Whoops. Can we edit that? So fall break is coming up, starts tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think the last time we were on the show, we had the family weekend coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I was leaving for Oregon.
That's right. So Esther, tell us about your time in Oregon and your conference.
You know, it was fantastic. I did not know what to expect. It was the Consortium of Christian Colleges and Universities Conference on Diversity and Inclusion. And it was fun to travel with the Dr. Sarah Baldwin. I don't know. She's traveling back to the West Coast today, so mm-hmm. I don't know if she's tuned in yet. But a shout out to Dr. Baldwin, Dr. Worcester, and Dr. Sims. We made it there and back in one piece.
Congratulations.
Yes, and I had a great time getting to share, mm-hmm. you know, the work that I've been doing in terms of looking at the impact of theology on mm-hmm. cultural competency. And I'm recognizing, as I shared with you, Maria, that this is kind of an emerging mm-hmm. conversation in the field of cultural intelligence and theology. Mm-hmm. So supposedly these two disciplines have existed for decades, mm-hmm. but they haven't really conversed with each other. Mm. And so it was good to be able to bring that to the CCCU. Mm-hmm. I was not sure how many people to expect in the session, you know, because they all get to pick the sessions. And I was kind of taken aback. Like, there were 30 people in the room comprised of presidents, provosts, VPs, all kinds of officers at different CCCU campuses. Mm-hmm. And it was quite the privilege, I would mm-hmm. say, to be a representative of Asbury University, but to also be a front runner mm-hmm. in this work. Our institution has really come a long ways, but we've got a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. We've got a long ways to go. Mm-hmm. You know, as our students have been telling us this week, mm-hmm. you know, Maria, I think you and I have had some conversations. Mm-hmm. Our students are telling us that we should really be further ahead mm-hmm. in this work of understanding cultural and ethnic diversity and how we treat each other. But it feels like our efforts have not made the difference that we want to see. So I hope that Asbury can step it up, that mm-hmm. we can find ways to really grow mm-hmm. in what it means to be the image of God and to respect the image of God in the other, regardless of cultural and ethnic differences.
Right.
So that's a mouthful, but...
Yeah, but so good. And, you know, Esther, as you were talking about... how these two disciplines have not conversed with one another, theology and cultural intelligence or cultural responsibility. It makes me think, as a university, with the background that we have, mm-hmm. Wesleyan holiness, we are poised to do it well, right? If we step into it. And so we can say, have we missed it? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. But our theology should inform this well. And I've been working with you for a few years now, yeah. and I don't think that I have ever seen you separate cultural responsibility from theology. Mm. I've always seen you put them together. And so it's almost kind of funny to me that it's a new thing to have them be one, because from my work with you, it just seems like that is the way it has always been and should be, because that's cultural responsibility is sort of... It doesn't have a foundation unless its foundation is in theology, right? Unless we right. really believe that we are made in the image of God, and that is why we are bound to one another this way, mm-hmm. then I think all of our efforts will wear us out, tire us out, we'll be discouraged, mm-hmm. and we won't have anything to be rooted in. And so I'm thankful that people are hearing this from you, and I love it that
yeah,
you
know, when
this.
When I started this work, it was really just a clear sense that God was inviting me mm-hmm. into this. That was my impression. And maybe another day I'll share the story of how this all came about 7 years ago. Although the journey was much longer than that, you know, I've been interested in culture and theology since I was six. So that's a whole nother story. But 7 years ago, right outside of Luce, the Luce Center, I had just worked out and I was having a conversation with God. And
He often speaks to us when we are sweaty and have those endorphins.
I know. It's like, God, what are you doing with us? Hmm. What are you doing with me? And I think we all ask that question. Mm-hmm. And it's in the midst of that turmoil that the words... cultural competency and Wesleyan theology came back to mind. But I'll just leave it at that. And I, you know, just want to say to our students, to our community, if you're listening in, please know that Maria and I are super dedicated to helping our campus, helping our campus to really reflect the kingdom of God. And I am so sorry if you are not experiencing the fullness of that yet, but I hope that you will not give up. Mm-hmm. You know, intercultural students, Caucasian students, we are trusting you to be the change agents beyond Asbury. Mm. And students, if you could see me right now in the studio, my heart is wanting to just reach out to yours and just invite you to work together for what God is revealing to us. Mm-hmm. Right? Take courage and let our disappointments propel us to make a difference in a productive way. So I've said a lot, Maria. We need to get to our guest.
But we do.
But it is on my heart, and I really could go on, but I was so happy to see Maria walk into the room at the seminary, at Asbury Seminary.
That's right, because you presented last week as well.
Yeah, so I presented a paper on the role of theology in the work of diversity and inclusion in Christian higher ed. And I will just say this. This is a freebie for everybody who's listening.
She doesn't give them out very often, so listen up.
Maria is right about that. So the Wesleyan understanding is so integral to the work of cultural competency because of the understanding that is a part of this theological foundation, right? So three things that I have discovered, amongst many others, is that the grace of God is available to all people. Mm-hmm. There is no exception to that. Secondly, that we have to collect ourselves and confirm for ourselves the essentials and the non-essentials of our faith. Mm. Right? And that could be unpacked. Maybe, Maria, you and I could just do a talk show on that. But we need to identify the essentials and non-essentials of our faith. And then the third piece is that God's grace. Mm-hmm. So not just the gifts that God gives, but the grace that God gives is for all people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so those three kind of become the blocks, if you would, or the foundations for why we must even engage in this work.
Right.
You know, that becomes the starting point. So
right. And what gives us hope, right? Because it is tiring work. Mm-hmm. And many times I think we come up against the reality that although we long for the kingdom and it is among us, it is not fully present. And so there will be gaps.
Yeah.
There will be hurts. There will be things that we bear that are heavy. And so that is our hope, right? That this, it is not coming from our ideas. It is not coming from our strength or our efforts or even our vision for what we want, however wonderful that vision may be, but it is coming from the reality of who God is. Mm-hmm. And when we are doing work flowing out of that reality, then we really cannot grow weary in doing good, because we know He is an inexhaustible source of grace and strength, and His kingdom really is coming and it will not be thwarted. Mm-hmm. And that is where our hope comes from.
Right.
I think when I get discouraged, it is because I run up against the reality of our world right now and forget where my source is and who is winning, maybe for lack of a better term.
Right. And I think it's so critical for us to realize that this work includes all of us. It includes our Caucasian community. It includes our international student community. It includes our U.S. ethnic minority. Mm-hmm. You know, so I have really hoped that we can start to talk about Caucasian cultural identity. Mm-hmm. What does that even mean? And then allow that to become the foundation or a place of understanding of the self as it relates to other cultures.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, yeah, Maria, we've had some fun things happening.
Yeah, lots of fun things.
We had Dr. Iberola.
We did. If you were at our diversity dialogue, Dr. Iberola did an amazing job of talking about the history of civil rights and where we're headed, mm-hmm. and gave us a good context for where we are now. And we had a student panel on that as well. And our own Sophie was a part of that panel.
Yes.
Sophie did a great job. So, yeah, we've had some good things,
Yeah, and we've got the Embrace coming up.
Embrace is coming up almost exactly 1 month away, November the 19th.
Yeah.
So we are working on all of the plans for that. And so, yeah, there are good things coming. There are good things coming. Yes. I think the problem that I have is, Esther, I could just say, like, just keep going. There's so many things that you could just keep talking about. We need to have just the Esther show.
No.
Like, I think give you the topic and say, go.
And, you know, I probably will go because I have so much to say only because I believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that is God's heart.
Mm. Yeah.
And God's heart is not just for one thing. You know, it's not just about the diversity, the culture, the ethnicity. God's heart is for all things, mm-hmm. for all of his people.
The restoration of all things.
Right. And so I could go, but I'm really eager to hear from our guest
today. Yes, I know. And she's waited so patiently. She even got here early, and I was not early. We have made her wait for a very long time. So wait no more. Drum roll. With us today is Helen. I'll introduce you. Helen Gonzalez is with us today. Welcome to our show, Helen.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
We're so happy you're here. So, Helen, can you tell us, I know this, but for those who are listening, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where you're from, how you got to Asbury, yeah. your year in school, your major, all those things.
See, my name is Helen Gonzalez. As Maria said, I am a senior this year, majoring in exercise science.
Don't graduate.
Scary times. I am from Louisville, or actually Shelbyville, Kentucky.
Yeah, but you said it right. It is Louisville. It is not Louisville.
Not Louisville.
It's Louisville.
I'm on the outskirts. No one knows Shelbyville.
Right.
People know Louisville.
But Shelbyville has the outlets.
We do have outlets.
So I know Shelbyville.
Yeah. Let's see, something else about me. I'm the oldest of three mm-hmm. in my family. I'd say my role in my family would be like a trailblazer.
Mm-hmm. Mm. How so?
Oh, I'm a lot of firsts in my family.
Mm-hmm.
For both my extended and just like intermediate family,
mm-hmm.
I'm the first to graduate from college. So that's really big.
Wow.
But also just for my intermediate and some of my extended, first to graduate from high school.
Wow.
Which today seems uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
But just for like my people group, education isn't well valued.
Mm.
But here we are making change.
Yeah. Wow. So you really are a trailblazer.
Oh, yeah.
So can you tell us where most of your family is now? I know you have family in mm-hmm. Louisville.
Yeah.
Shelbyville. Where else is your family?
A majority of my family is going to be from Guatemala, which, for those of you that don't know, Guatemala is in Central America. Guatemala is directly located under Mexico mm-hmm. and then above El Salvador and Honduras.
Very good. So, Helen, did you spend time in Guatemala growing up?
I didn't actually visit Guatemala until, I think, the summer of my eighth grade year. And from then on, I've gone almost every summer to Guatemala, and it's just been such a great experience.
Wow.
I really wish I would have gone, like, earlier.
Uh-huh.
But I think that was, like, a good time to, like, really understand my culture mm-hmm. and be immersed in it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about what that was like for you to visit Guatemala for the first time as an eighth mm-hmm. grader, which we all know is an awkward time of life anyways, right? I have an eighth grader now. If he happens to be listening, he is well-loved, but it is an awkward time of life. So tell us what that was like to experience a culture that is your family's culture, but that you had not grown up in.
I saw a lot of similarities from home, but just being there was like nothing else. I was immersed and actually seeing what Guatemala was like. I always heard stories and pictures of it being like an impoverished like country. The town we live in is all right. But once I got there, I really got to understand the beauty and like the struggles that Guatemala has.
Mm-hmm.
Usually hear about Guatemala through mission trips.
Mm-hmm.
But the way we live is different. We are more on the southern border, which is a more like modern-ish Guatemala versus the north where most missionaries go. It's going to be more urban, rural. But I really got to see like Guatemala is more than what like people really say. And I'm continuing to learn like about Guatemala and its culture, its differences and similarities with other cultures. My roommate, Sarah Wesson, shout out to her. She's listening. But about every night, we just talk about all the similarities between our cultures.
Ketchup, right?
Yeah, we really bonded over ketchup.
Explain to our listeners.
We really bonded over ketchup.
Are you able to share?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
Helen has some feelings about ketchup.
And sounds like so does Sarah Wesson. Yes.
It's serious business.
So usually at night we talk about food. I don't know why, but food
it's
always
a good bedtime
up.
Conversation.
But then we end up like hungry at night.
Right.
We just brush our teeth. So we're not able to eat. So we just talk about food. So once we were talking about like just the differences in American food, condiments and that. And I mentioned, you know what I like? It's weird, but I really like the ketchup better in Guatemala than here. And she's like, me too. And I was like,
wow.
Wait a minute.
So has Sarah been to Guatemala?
No, but she's from Honduras.
Okay.
So it's like the
they
same,
have similar
like,
ketchup there.
Product.
Okay. Okay.
But I was like, yeah, it tastes different. So over there in Guatemala, I guess their products are more natural slash they have the product there in the country. So they just use it there. So I describe the ketchup there as more of a sweet and like the vinegary, tangy taste of ketchup here. And I'm more of a sweet than savory and spicy person, so I really like that ketchup. I'll put it on everything. Like, it sounds weird, but I'll put ketchup on, like, my tortillas with chicken on there, and it's amazing. Because over there, ketchup is called salsa, so it is a salsa.
Oh, so totally on your tortilla. It makes sense.
Of course.
Yeah. It's a salsa. Who wouldn't do that?
So me and Sarah really bonded over that.
So, like, Helen, do you have some here with you?
I do
or
not.
Can you get it at the grocery stores in Lexington, maybe? You know, like the...
I haven't checked.
Ethnic grocery stores?
I could probably order it on Amazon, but I haven't
Because
checked.
Now I'm like, Maria, I think we need to...
How do we get Helen some ketchup?
We need to sample it, too, because it's sounding really good.
It's amazing.
Okay.
And then we talked about how that's why we have a love for barbecue sauce.
Right,
because... that's the closest thing to it.
Yeah, it's a little sweeter. Makes total sense.
It just clicked. At that moment, we went to another level of friendship over ketchup.
Kindred spirits.
So it's amazing how even the differences can allow us to find something similar. That's amazing, Helen.
That is. Helen, I think it's really interesting the comment that you made to take us before the ketchup rabbit trail we went on. You said when you went to Guatemala, you had heard stories. So there were lots of things. And I'm assuming that the way your family was together was culturally a lot like Guatemala.
Yes.
But then when you went, you saw Guatemala in all its complexity, in its beauty. And I love that you brought that out because I think often we do have a single story about a culture or a country. And we might say, oh, Guatemala is impoverished or... oh, Guatemala has a lot of needs and some of those things might be true, but it's not the only story. And so I love how your experience in Guatemala has made that country and that culture much more layered than just one single story.
It's just like the Guatemalan culture here can only be so similar to being over there.
Right, right. I think that's really interesting. Yeah, and I think it is sort of a metaphor for us in this culture to remember as we're encountering people from other cultures, not to make them a single story. Right. So we tend to, I mean, we would call those stereotypes obviously, but we tend to make it this person from this place is this way. And people are much more complicated than that, right? And so when we really enter in, like you did in your experience in Guatemala, when we really enter in, we find the complexity and the beauty of people that is just much more than one mm-hmm. single story. So you go back to Guatemala how often? Maybe once a year?
I try once a year. This year I was there last winter break, so end of January I came back. So this year I won't go back till after graduation.
Okay. And will you have family come from Guatemala for your graduation?
I hope so.
Oh, I hope so too. What a milestone for your family. What fun, amazing thing to celebrate.
Yeah, I'm just not a trailblazer just for my like siblings, but also my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are seeing me do it, and they just always ask, oh, how's college? How's that?
Mm-hmm.
And just piquing an interest there.
Right. You are paving the way for mm-hmm. them. Wow, that's amazing. So, Helen, before we take a quick break, can you talk to us about some of your favorite things to do when you go to Guatemala?
Mm-hmm. My favorite things to do. First of all, eat. I think the Latin American culture just really loves food, mm-hmm. and it's just so diverse. I just love tasting the different dishes there that I don't see here. And then I really just like seeing my family more than anything.
Mm-hmm. And you've said before that the way that you all eat is a little different, right? Like the cooking lasts all day.
Yes.
For the really big meals.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that seems like a pretty interesting cultural difference as well, mm-hmm. that gathering around food is much more of an experience than it is oftentimes here in the United States for us, that it brings your family in, that you're all together. It's a day-long experience.
Dinner time, it doesn't matter what you're doing, homework, anything, you're coming for eating at the table.
I like that. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk some more about culture, faith, and identity. Welcome back, Asbury. This is the Embrace Radio Hour. I'm Maria, and I'm here with Esther and our guest, Helen. And Helen, you have been telling us what it is like to grow up in the United States, but have this family culture based mm-hmm. in Guatemala, and what that was like to go and visit Guatemala. We've talked about ketchup. And I'm so glad that we had that conversation. But I was wondering, I asked you this during the break, if you could tell our listeners a little bit about what it was like to grow up in the United States, but have your home or family culture be different from the majority culture. So as your identity is forming, you're going through school, mm-hmm. what was that like for you?
Okay, I think at a young age, it started off just as a light switch. I'd go to school, I'd turn on like, okay, my American culture, I guess. I'd just speak English, go to school, do the social norms they do. But once I got home, I was like, okay, that switch is off. Because at home, we only spoke Spanish. Mm. My parents weren't like proficient in English.
Mm.
So even if I wanted to speak in English, Spanish is the way to go at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd flip the switch to Spanish. Continue with our cultural norms, such as dinner is very valued, also helping for dinner
mm-hmm.
as well, and then just overall having that family time after spending the majority of the day
mm-hmm.
away.
Mm-hmm.
Middle school, I think, was when I really started to understand and see culture.
Mm-hmm.
Then the switch wasn't much of an off and on. It was more of a it's constantly flickering. There'd be times in middle school I'd be like, oh, look, I'm with other Latino American students.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this. But at the same time, convert back to like American culture and mm-hmm. talk about that. Growing up, culture was a difficult thing.
Yeah.
Where I grew up, there was a Guatemalan population. But in the Latino community that I was in, it was a minority population there.
Okay.
And since I had no other people to relate to, there's a point in time, and I've told this story to a few of my friends here on campus, that I actually told people that I was Mexican instead
really?
Of Guatemalan, because there's just no one to relate to. And I'd say Guatemalan, and they're like, where is that? What is that? Never heard of it. So I was just, you know, why not? I can just say I'm Mexican. I saw no like problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just flipped it like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. And then people would ask me, oh, where in Mexico? And me not knowing anything
Guatemala.
About it, I was like, oh, Chihuahua, Mexico. That's a place, right? That's popular. And they're like, oh, cool. And then the conversation was over.
Mm-hmm.
But I did do that for a bit in middle school.
Interesting.
You know, terrible middle school years.
Oh, right. Who wants to relive middle school,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
But then once, as I said, in eighth grade, I actually went to Guatemala mm-hmm. and changed. I was like, why would I ever, like, hide my culture, change my culture? Like, this is beautiful. This is what I want.
Hmm.
And from then on, like, my culture has strengthened. My love for Guatemala mm-hmm. has really gone up.
Yeah. What a beautiful story of... Mm-hmm. I mean, development in general, right? So all of us are searching for our identity. We sort of in some way try on different identities. We try to figure out who we are. Mm-hmm. That's challenging enough when you're a member of the majority culture, but especially challenging when you're a minority. But you're saying a minority within a minority,
yes.
which is even more challenging. Yeah. So was there, besides saying... I'm Mexican. Was there ever a time where you really pushed back, like even with your own family, against culture? Like, I don't want to flip the switch anymore. I just want to be one or the other.
Yeah, there were just times where, like, my friends would always just, like, do these events or hang out all the time. But my parents were like, no, like, this is our time as a family. Like, you know, these are the values we've always mm-hmm. grown up with. And then just the pushback, like, why can't I just go hang out with my friends?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I always... like home, I see you guys every day. What's one day without it?
Mm-hmm.
But like now that I look back, like I cherish those days.
Mm, that's really sweet, but difficult at the time, right?
Yeah, at the time I was just like, but why?
Yeah,
why can't, what's one day gonna do? What's 2 days?
Right,
a weekend.
Right. Yeah, and so your parents were also balancing that being in a culture that they were not.
Mm-hmm.
Fully members of, if that's an okay way to say it. They were not members of the majority culture. They were carrying on their culture in their home. And I'm sure that that was a challenge for them as well, to figure out how to navigate that with kids mm-hmm. who are straddling two cultures. I think we have a lot of students on our campus who could resonate with that kind of experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Helen, as I get ready to ask you the next question, I'm wondering if you could help our audience here, what are some of the cultural values that you appreciate? You know, so you just shared with us how your love for Guatemala has mm-hmm. just grown because you are able to step back into it mm-hmm. and see it for yourself with a fresh lens. And so could you share with us just some cultural distinctions or distinctives that we can learn to appreciate? You know, I have not been to Guatemala mm-hmm. yet, but I love cultures.
Yes.
And so share with us some of the distinctives. You know, what are the values? I know that communal centric is very critical to Latin American mm-hmm. cultures, right? But perhaps respect for elders. Like, what are some other features that stand out to you? And that should stand out to us as a result of us knowing you.
Again, family. Family is just so big.
Mm.
Like, in Guatemala, it's so big that the neighborhoods are structured around family.
Mm.
Like, where we live in Guatemala, all of my uncles and aunts on my dad's side all build houses and live all around my grandma.
Mm.
And then that's, like, our neighborhood. And then if you go down the street, it's another, like... family doing the same thing.
Okay.
So I guess we do also like value our elders as well,
mm-hmm.
staying with them and staying close to home as much as like we can.
Okay. That's great. I was trying to formulate, you know, what you shared with us, that building of the community happens around building of the family.
Yes.
Mm.
Right? So neighborhoods are more comprised of family networks.
Yes.
As opposed to not.
Yeah, like my grandma had 9 kids.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And then it still continues on because I have cousins my age and older who already are planning on taking over their parents' house whenever they pass away
mm-hmm.
or building close to there. Like when I was like growing up, I was like, well, I want to do that too. Like our house has like an ample backyard. I was like, I'm going to make my house here too. And then my little brother and sister are like, oh, me too, and me too. And it's just something that's so well-rooted in our family that, like, you just want to continue growing that, like, family neighborhood.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful imagery and a concept to have a community of kindred, mm-hmm. kindredness, right? So Helen, moving to the next question, you've definitely traveled through a lot of cultural layers. So you've grown up as Guatemalan, mm-hmm. but in the North American context of Louisville.
Yes.
Did I say that right? Louisville.
Not quite. It's Louisville.
I hope I get it. So you grew up in Louisville,
there you
which
go.
Is more diverse than where we are
yeah.
in Wilmore. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about what that transition was like to traverse through two different locations mm-hmm. and contexts and cultures and come to Asbury and to Wilmore. What was that like?
I guess it'd be like a reverse culture shock. I went from being surrounded by so much culture, not just Latin America, but Louisville does also have like a high Indian population mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So just the amount of culture there was immense to coming to like Wilmore. I'm a senior, but I'm still not well like rooted and known in mm-hmm. Lexington. Mm. So just being in a place where it's like, okay, so maybe I'm feeling this type of food from home. How am I able to find that here?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a continuous like struggle slash finding out who knows this area and the resources that I may need,
mm-hmm.
but also finding it for myself and finding these communities. Because I know they're there.
Right.
But maybe not just as big as mm-hmm. back home.
Sure. Maybe not as big and even not as accessible mm-hmm. as they might mm-hmm. be. In Louisville. So speak more specifically to what was it like to step into the Asbury community as a person of a Guatemalan mm-hmm. descent heritage. What were some of your experiences? And, you know, we have the benefit of hearing from you as having been a part of this community for all 4 years of your academic career, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us. Perhaps maybe give us a couple different viewpoints. You know, what was it like as a freshman
oh, yeah.
and maybe uh-huh. as you became upperclassman and now senior, mm-hmm. what has that journey been like for you? Perhaps the good moments and even the challenging ones. What was it like?
Mm-hmm. So freshman year, I was at like first generation college student. It was all foreign. But I got the resources I needed, both here at Asbury and, like, high school.
Mm-hmm.
So come in here. My freshman year was kind of just discovering, seeing what's out there. I wasn't well-rooted in, like, the intercultural department.
Mm-hmm.
I was just focused on, like, getting the first year right, making sure everything is right. There are times my freshman year that I was like, do I really fit in? Like,
mm-hmm.
there's some days where it's like no one really understands, like, what's going on or, like, I'm really excited about this thing happening in my country or other, like just worldwide news, but I don't see anyone else as excited
mm.
or even have the knowledge about it. But it wasn't until like sophomore year that I like learned about LSA
mm-hmm.
and like the things they do. And then I really got to know more of like the international student groups. I ended up becoming a part of LSA mm-hmm. and then Stephanie Beltran, who graduated, I think, last year,
mm-hmm.
really just took me under her wing, and we mm. really bonded over differences, similarities, what it's really like to be a minority here, and how sometimes people aren't aware and don't understand the things that are going back home, but there are people who do understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what it sounds like is a journey of finding your place mm-hmm. in this community, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've shared in the past that our community is really made up of incredible people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we really do care. Asburians are known for caring, but oftentimes our shortfalls are primarily because of our lack of awareness. You know,
yeah.
we just mm-hmm. perhaps for different reasons, I'm sure, we're just not aware of how each of us experiences this campus differently. You know, so thank you for helping us see that even in the midst of these complexities that we ought to find our place mm-hmm. in this community, because Asbury wants you to belong, wants yeah. you to be a part, and gain, you know, gain a great education, but also the transformational experience because of our faith and our theological foundations with that. So I think those are critical things. But Helen, as you're nearing to the end of your Asbury University journey, right? What are some things that you would like to leave with our campus? Mm-hmm. Like, why should we care about culture? Why should we care about understanding each other? Like, what difference does it make? I know that Maria has a couple questions, but I just want to kind of ask that. Like, why should we care? Why does it matter mm-hmm. that we understand, you know?
I think one of the biggest reasons is, like, we're all made in God's image. We may look different, come from different backgrounds, different experience, but at the end of the day, we're all made in His image, mm-hmm. which I think is just, like, so simple and just so, like, beautiful. And sometimes you just forget the differences overcome the similarities sometimes. Mm. But I think just that simple phrase, like, we're all made in His image, should just be, like, the main motivator to mm-hmm. why we should care, why we should get to learn more about each other, because we're all bits and pieces of His image.
Mm-hmm. Helen, I have really enjoyed hearing more of your story. And I'm always thinking when I'm hearing from students, how can we help your story apply to our larger campus, whether it's mm-hmm. faculty or staff or other students in our community? And one of the things you said as you were talking about visiting Guatemala, and again, the way that your family, the homes are situated around each other, and Esther said, it is so beautiful. It kind of makes me feel a little bit jealous, like, oh. And it makes me realize, too, what a trailblazer you are, that mm-hmm. you have that as your roots, but you really have stepped into a place where you're looking out for yourself in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. And so I'm amazed by that strength. And mm-hmm. But your beautiful description of community and of culture in Guatemala, and it made me think the loyalty and love that you have for the culture really flows out of, one, your family, but and your family's loyalty to culture and to the family unit, but also to your experience being there and experiencing it yourself. And it made me think, for our students and for our community, the value of immersion, even in just mm-hmm. a relationship with someone, that is what increases our love, increases our loyalty, and hopefully does what you said, to begin to help us to see we are all made in God's image. We're not just a single story. So I love that this picture of your own journey hopefully relates to anyone who's listening, the value of this kind of immersion. And I think that's very much Christ-like, very relational focused, very focused on the long haul, staying in it, being rooted. And so I really, really enjoyed that. As Esther was asking you about your time at Asbury, I was wondering, and maybe you don't have any examples of this, but I was wondering if there's anything that you've seen that has changed over the 4 years on our campus. So from when you stepped on Asbury's campus as a freshman to when you walk across the stage to receive your diploma, is there anything that as a community you have seen change or grow in your time here?
I know Esther has heard this. I said it before in a meeting with the SIP, which is the Student Intercultural mm-hmm. Vice President.
Programs.
How freshman year, that position was not in existence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But my sophomore year to now, it's here. And I really can't remember a time without it. Mm-hmm. It's been just so vital. Like, there really was a time at Asbury where SIP and all the intercultural departments weren't really well known mm-hmm. or integrated in Asbury. Mm-hmm. And they've just been very impactful in my, like, Asbury journey. Mm-hmm. And I just really hope more people get more involved with the events, but also see, like, hey, we're here. Even other, like, minority students know, like, hey, we're here. Mm-hmm. We're here to help, and we have all the resources.
Yeah. So perhaps you've seen increased visibility and yes. Action on campus. with the SIP and mm-hmm. more visibility in our intercultural student groups. That's great. And you, did we say that you are in LSA as you're in leadership?
I am in LSA.
Tell everyone what you do.
Right now, I'm the secretary of LSA.
But you were the president.
I was the president.
You did not get demoted. We should say that.
Oh, yeah.
We just changed roles, but you were not demoted.
We all have, like, our roles, but it's pretty much just all of us pitching in, mm-hmm. same ideas and everything, and putting in the same effort. Mm-hmm. But I've seen, like, LSA grow from, like, my sophomore year to now, and mm-hmm. it's really, like, been well established. We have a good like group of people here mm-hmm. and we just want to continue to hold that strong foundation and just grow from there.
Yeah, you all have a lot of momentum going, I think. Mm-hmm. And I have heard of spontaneous taco nights.
We have, as I said, Latin American loves food. We've had spontaneous taco nights, quesadilla nights. In the winter, I like making this dish, arroz con leche. Mm. Yes, all the foods.
That. And you all put on the Latino Festival here on our campus.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you came on as a freshman, did you envision yourself as a leader?
I don't think so.
So that is interesting too, right? As a trailblazer for your family, that you have stepped into leadership roles for LSA and being an ambassador on campus as well, in ways that you didn't envision.
Yeah, now that you say that, it's really interesting.
Yeah, so that's a lot of personal growth as well mm-hmm. in your journey here. That's really exciting, Helen. Well, we've talked about this some already, but I was wondering if there's anything else you wanted to say about the role of faith in culture and identity formation. So we've talked about the image of God, but I'm wondering, as you were especially going through those more difficult stages in middle school where you're flipping that switch mm-hmm. on and off, where you're trying to decide, should I stay with my parents in this unit or can I hang out with my friends? What role did faith play in that identity formation for you?
What role did faith play? I think throughout like the younger years, faith was there, but not very prominent. But like throughout the years, like every time a switch was flipped or the identity was changed, I felt as though, like, my identity in Christ was, like, my real identity was mm-hmm. being hidden. Mm. I was just not being the person God made me to be. Mm-hmm. And, like, just through self-discovery, I'm seeing, like, how God has made me, like, this complex person with this many experiences and just, like, layers of culture. Mm-hmm. And, like, that through this discovery, I'm able to see the beauty of complexity in culture. Mm-hmm. And not just through me, but, like, through others as well.
Yeah, very good. I think you said something before that made me think of this, or perhaps it was something Esther was saying, but mm-hmm. I think it might be applicable now, is that God is not afraid of those hard things or the messiness or the complexity, and he is so faithful to walk with us through it, so that we can embrace some of the messy identity formation, some of the difficulties mm-hmm. of straddling cultures. Yeah, that God is not afraid of that.
Yeah, and I think it's through, like, the messy where you really see the clear idea that God has for you mm-hmm. and the identity he has for you.
Yes. Amen. It is in through the messy that you really see, right? We don't tend to think that way, but it is true. It is in the messy that we usually see sometimes the clearest view of God. Very good. You know, we only have 5 minutes left and we forgot to take our second break. We just kept talking the whole time. We've worn you out. Helen, it's been so good to have you here. Since you are, well, you only have just a little bit left with us. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want the Asbury students or our community to know about you? Now's your chance, Helen. No pressure.
Oh, yeah. No pressure at all. I don't know. I think I've said a lot. Majority. Yeah.
You've given
get involved in campus on all the events, not just intercultural, but get actually involved.
Yeah, that's really key.
It will help you see who you are and what you're actually passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is key. Get involved. So I hope that students are listening to that. Mm-hmm. And I hope that they really learn from your story of the value of immersion and relationship, mm-hmm. rootedness in who we are, and that God is faithful in all of that process. So I'm sure that Esther has things percolating in her mind that we need to hear. And then I can close us out with a couple of announcements.
Yeah. Maria, how did you know? I did have a few thoughts going on in my mind because I was thinking that I'm not quite sure that anything can take the place of God, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Neither my culture, nor my ethnicity, nor my accomplishments. They can take the place of God if we allow. Mm-hmm. But I think nothing can take the place of God when that becomes our center and our focus. And I think at Asbury, we do such a good job of giving each of us an opportunity at transformation. And then sometimes we lose sight of the other aspects that God has given us, right? That while I am God's creation, that I am also a cultural person, you know? And so I think our community needs to perhaps engage in more conversations of the rightful place of God, and then positioning these other aspects of who we are, whether as internationals or Caucasian, through that prism, through that lens. How does God want me to understand who I am as a person, of whether it's Caucasian identity or Latino or Asian or Black? How mm-hmm. does God, because I'm not sure that we just stop being these cultural, we carry these with us, but I think what's more critical is that it's kind of seen through the lens of how God mm-hmm. sees it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I'm sorry because I'm probably not unpacking that as much as I would like to, but I think we need to recognize that nothing takes the place of God, and yet our earthly identities mm-hmm. do have a place somehow within that. And so I'm kind of working through that in my mind, Maria.
Yeah. I think that's something good for us to chew on as a community, right? That we can actually put a lot of things that are good out of order. So
that's
even
good language. Yes.
Even when we talk about, well, I think Dr. Brown talked about this in chapel, that we use reason and experience to interpret scripture, but scripture is foremost, right? So you have mm-hmm. to sort of have the hierarchy, right, in order mm-hmm. to get the right interpretation. And when we flip that, it's not that the things we're using are bad. They're just not in the right order.
Sure.
And I think that might be what you're hitting on. So,
I think we do need to do a radio show just one day just to talk about these matters
right.
of culture.
The theology of cultural mm-hmm. intelligence and responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good stuff today. Good stuff.
Yes.
I think we've given people a lot of things to think about. And Helen, we are so glad that we had you on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you here, and we are going to get you some ketchup.
I can't wait.
We're not going to make you suffer anymore. Well, Asbury, we will be back here in 2 weeks, mm-hmm. And I actually can't remember who we're interviewing, but it's someone amazing, and be looking for information about the Embrace Conference. There will be an opportunity to register online, which you actually can do now. That is an exciting event. We want as many people involved as possible, and have a wonderful fall break, a safe, restful, rejuvenating, Asbury appropriate fall break.
Absolutely. And Maria, enjoy the rest of your birthday as well.
Thank you.
And Helen, it has been a delight to know you for these 4 years. And I hope you know that we continue to remain in relationship and friendship mm-hmm. even beyond Asbury. I think that is the nature of Asbury relationships, mm-hmm. that they surpass graduation deadlines. But thank you. And Sophie, as always, a big thank you to you for helping us with the radio show. Have a great time camping and cheering your friends on.
Stay warm, Sophie.
Thank in you, the guys. Race.
So, thank you, Asbury, for tuning in, and we look forward to being with you again in 2 weeks.